Hello and welcome to another episode of the Golden Hour Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, David Altizer.
And Connor McGaskill.
And we are coming at you about a month after our last recording. And if you're watching this video on our YouTube channel, it's been even longer. And there's a couple of reasons for that. Number one, this is us kind of announcing that we're primarily an audio-first podcast moving forward. So if you're a fan of the show and you consume it on YouTube, please consider subscribing on your audio podcast player of choice, whether that's Apple Podcast, Spotify, like Connor, or Overcast, which is one of my favorites. But all of them are there. They're everywhere. Google Podcasts. We're on every service. So please make sure to subscribe to the audio if you're a fan of the show and you consume on YouTube. We're going to continue to post on YouTube. We're not going to kill the channel. Just going to be more selective for, you know, special guests or special occasions. And that's definitely the case today for this episode, because a lot has happened in the last couple of months, and especially the last month for me in particular. And that is because I had a baby. Well, my wife had a baby. We had a baby.
Yay.
Got three boys now. You can see in the photo here, this blurry low res photo. There you go. I've got three boys. My wife was a total champion, and had the baby, fully natural. This was back in October, so it's been a while. So I've been kind of in the ringer here, you know, in terms of living the dad life and balancing work and family and everything. Yeah. I don't know why the images are not loading here on Google Photos. Boo, Google Photos. But yeah, these are just some images of my son, JJ. His name is Jonathan James, and we've just been calling him JJ. And these are just some images of my oldest son, Ryan, holding him. And Connor got to meet him last week. So here's a nice image of Connor holding the baby. JJ's looking a little angry in this photo, but
he wasn't having it. He was like, who's this guy? I don't like him.
Yeah, very excited to welcome a new addition to our family. It's been a bit of a, you know, adjustment dealing with an infant and two older, you know, boys that are also rambunctious and crazy in their own right. But it's just a ton of fun. We're having a lot of fun with the three of us, or the three boys. But it's a lot of work as well. So, kind of an update for me personally, having another baby.
So yeah, obviously Dave having the baby definitely is a great excuse as to why this podcast hasn't happened in a while. Lots of camera news has been happening lately as well. And honestly, the biggest camera news, I think, in honestly quite a while, is the Sony A9 Mark III. Right, Dave?
Yes, the A9 Mark III. I was really excited about this camera and seeing all the rumors about it, because this is the first of its kind. This is a global shutter, full frame sensored camera. Mm-hmm. If you're a camera fan, which many of you are, I'm sure you guys are already aware of this. Again, we're coming in a little late on the news here, but we just wanted to share our overall thoughts on this camera. I'm stoked about it. Looks like Sony really touched a lot of the kind of pain points that a lot of us have with their body style as well. They rounded off the edges quite a bit. They've softened the grip. They've made the grip slightly larger.
Right.
Going off of these images, it doesn't really look like that's the case, but you can see how kind of the corners are slightly rounded now rather than being super sharp, which has been the case with Sony cameras in the past. So that's good. I mean, they're taking ergonomics into consideration when they're building this. I would imagine moving forward, we're going to see this in future cameras as well. They've also got the wonderful flip screen that is like a dual purpose, you know, flip out and flip around screen. This is literally the best screen on the market. I think every camera should have this. I don't know who owns the patent or the technology on this, probably Sony, but
Panasonic has a camera with that, right?
Yeah, I don't know how you can get this in here, but like, give me this on everything, because this is the coolest idea.
Yeah, and I mean, it satisfies both the photographers who want the classic tilt-up screen, and it satisfies all of us whining YouTubers who need a flip-around screen. Yep. It's perfect.
And if you're taking photos vertically, obviously you can go in this orientation. You can see in the video where you can flip out the screen and take vertical shots. So this is the coolest engineering design I've seen in a while. Mm-hmm. And yeah, like you said, the S1H was the first one that I saw that had something like this, but it was thick and chunky. The GH6 also has a similar screen, but mm-hmm. Sony has figured out how to make it really compact, and it doesn't seem to affect the like thickness of the screen that much. So
yeah, no, I agree. I think it's well designed. It's really awesome to see the grip get changed. Mm-hmm. As you and I know, the Sony grips have always been uncomfortable. That's been a huge plus to Canon, or in this case Lumix, lately, but now Sony's finally fixing that. Maybe they also fixed their menus. That would be great. I mean,
no, it's the same, I think. Yeah, same system.
The newer Sony menus are definitely better, but it's still the same. Yeah. Besides that one little like extra feature, which is nice, but they can improve.
The A9 series for the last couple years, all the way back to the original A9, the Mark I, was designed to be kind of the sports journalist camera. The camera that was designed to replace like a 1DX series, or the, what is it? The D3, I think, from Nikon, or D4 or something. Whatever the Nikon equivalent of like a flagship is.
Right.
And for years, even though the A9 was performing in terms of the shutter speed or the amount of images it can take and the autofocus performance, because the camera was just simply mirrorless, or and it didn't have a flappity mirror, the speed in which the photographer is kind of looking through the EVF, there's enough of a delay that, like, when you're dealing with photography that is so fast moving and so fast action, having any type of delay with an EVF can pose to be an issue. So true. Even to this day, when you look at NFL photographers, or, you know, photographers documenting journalistic, you know, events, often they're still using DSLRs, and you can hear it, you know, when you listen to a presidential you know, announcement speech, you can hear the journalist going,
yeah, those real chunky shutters. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And paparazzi and just all that stuff. Anytime you hear the, it's just, that's what they're doing. They're just rattling off hundreds and hundreds of images, because it's easier to just kind of pull the trigger and then in post find the right moment rather than being perfect, because everything's happening in front of them. They can't control what's happening with the athletes or with the celebrities. Mm-hmm. So to them, they're just like, they're composing the image the best of that they can. They're trying to make sure their focus is locking, and then they just pull it and just go all out. And yeah. With the EVF, you would have blackout issues, and again, even just a slight delay. Well, yeah. The A9 III also rolling shutter issues.
I was going to say, the biggest issue was probably the rolling shutter for a lot of these guys too, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, exactly. The mirrorless cameras, I don't know the difference really between like a mechanical shutter and a mirrorless camera versus a DSLR, but I do think that there was just always issues with rolling shutter, especially when you go into electronic shutter mode. But
yeah, I can't speak for DSLRs, but how it works with a lot of mirrorless cameras is that when you take a photo, it's not taking a pure moment in time. It's capturing a line at a time, right? Mm-hmm. So as you click the shutter, you didn't take the whole photo. You took the first line of pixels, and then the next lines go.
Well, electronic shutter mode, yes. But when you're using a mechanical shutter, even in a mirrorless camera, it still is. Yeah, it's taking an image from the top down, and it reads it at that speed. But right. The mechanical shutter is able to just quickly go up and down, and it kind of captures that moment.
The sensor still has that shutter issue, at least for video.
Yeah, for sure.
I guess I'm talking more for video then, because it does do a line reading, and that's why global shutter is particularly interesting, because it is capturing the entire sensor, which gives it a whole new feel.
This is exciting for those types of photographers, because now you can shoot at, like, I don't even remember the highest shutter speed, I think like 80,000th of a second, which is freezing an image in a crazy way, but you have a global shutter, so the entire sensor is just capturing the image in its entirety in that split second, which and there's no blackout in the EVF as well. Mm-hmm. You're able to shoot up to 120 frames per second with no blackout, raw images, 24 megapixels, which is plenty for this type of photography. Most of those cameras, most of the flagship cameras with the really high frame per second count are fairly like average megapixel size because, again, they're taking thousands of images. They don't want 50 megapixels to deal with. We've got best-in-class, you know, autofocus, of course, from Sony. We've got a 9.44 million dot EVF, which is their highest resolution EVF. Most EVFs are in the 5 million dot.
Right.
I think the Lumix is around like 3 or 4 million. So this is going to be super high resolution EVF. Dual CFast Express card, similar to the A7S and the A7R5. But with video in particular, which I'm most interested in, we get a global shutter full frame cinema camera, really, that's shooting S-Log3. It's got all the same kind of features that we're grown accustomed to for video for Sony cameras. You can shoot 4K 120 with no crop now on this. It's a 6K to 4K down res, so it's a really sharp image. While I'm kind of rambling on, I'll just have Jevon's video playing in the background because Jevon Dovey got to go to New York and get some hands-on footage time with it. And what I love about his video here is that he really went in there with the athletes and the models that were there and just got some real actual footage, similar to how he would shoot a real video. Oh, thank you, Laura. My wife just delivered me a coffee. Thank you so much.
Oh, that's great.
Baby. Love you. And he turned off the IBIS. And I remember when Connor first checked this out, he's like, yeah, it's really shaky. It's like, well, yeah, this is an intentional example of like getting that handheld look. And there is a certain kind of motion cadence to global shutter that really emulates the look of film that we've kind of all innately consumed when we've watched old movies shot on film, because that's essentially how film works. Mm-hmm. Although technically you can get some almost rolling shutter type issues with film as well, because obviously the film is going up, it's spinning through a thing, and it's also sort of creating a rolling shutter in a way, but it's much better than a traditional digital rolling shutter sensor. But anyways, the closest thing to this for video would be like a Red Komodo, which is coming in at a similar price point, if not more expensive. Plus, it's a cropped Super 35 sensor, and it's got the headaches of Red in terms of, like, you know, the autofocus isn't where it should be. It doesn't have the flip screen. It's not designed for photos. So if you're a hybrid shooter, you're not going to be able to really use it. I mean, you can, but
you got to build it out. That's the thing about it too.
Yeah, there's a huge difference between a Red and a Sony mirrorless camera in terms, like, you can't really compare them, to be honest, because they're two different types of cameras.
Yeah.
But that's kind of the closest thing to compare to for video. And to me, like, having the best in class autofocus, the best flip screen, a new body style that's more comfortable to hold, the best image, you know, that you can get in terms of, like, the best photography camera that Sony makes in terms of, like, no blackout, blah blah blah. And that global shutter that looks so cinematic.
It's kind of
4K 120. It's like, it's everything.
It's kind of the best camera.
and I
kind of almost sincerely mean that, because you're, like you said, you're getting the benefit. The global shutter thing has been around. We've had that. It's just only ever been in these cinema style bodies, which is fine for what you need. But the fact now that you can slot this in a backpack, which you could say you could do with the Komodo, but this is different because it's a hybrid body. Mm-hmm. I think that's the coolest. I mean, obviously it's full frame, which is also great, but like, and they're like, first global shutter on a full frame, but it's like, it's also hybrid. Like, I think that part is being undersold a bit, and I don't know. It's pretty cool. It's just going to cost you a bit of money. But when you consider everything you're getting, it's actually reasonably affordable.
Yeah. It's of course. Yeah. It's $6,000, body only. And Sony's glass, if you want to get into the G Master realm, is in the $2,500, you know, $3,000 range if you want a good GM lens.
Yep.
So, you know, if you're getting into the system, you're spending probably $10,000 to get a couple lenses in this body.
Right.
So that's definitely not something to fret at when you can buy, not fret,
scoff.
I'm looking for scoff at, but like when you can buy a Lumix S5 II for under $2,000, essentially.
And get some relatively solid lenses for under a grand each.
They've got, they've got these great Panasonic Prime lenses that Connor and I have that are fantastic. They're each like $300-$400, you know? So, but that's not...
Like, it's a different.
I think that's understood. Like, as long as you guys understand that, for the for those who care, this is a great, exciting new camera. And I, if you're a video shooter, I would still maybe hold off and just like see what happens in the next year. If you guys are already shooting on the A7S or the FX3 or the FX30, any of those kind of more traditional video cameras, even the A7 IV, like those are giving you 99% of what this is going to give you. It's just that global shutter is a nice little extra. And I'm curious to see what they do now with this new body style and with this screen for like the next A7S, because imagine if they do a global shutter low light camera with the same flip screen with the same body, and it would probably end up being a little cheaper too. It'd probably be like 35 or four or whatever. Because the A7S, I think, is a cheaper camera than this. A lot of the money, a lot of the stuff that you're paying for with that, the A7S is $3,500.
Yeah.
So a lot of the money that you're spending on the A9 is going towards a lot of the photography features that many of us video people don't just simply don't need. So, but if you kind of want the perfect hybrid, I think this is it. I think the A9 III is kind of, for the first time, like one of the best all-around cameras. It, you know, if, people always say it's like it's hard to call something the perfect camera, but like I'm having a hard time, with the exception of the price point, I'm having a hard time seeing any real flaws with it.
You know, I don't know. I'd even argue the price point isn't flawed, because like the 1DX Mark III is, I think, $5,500, and that's like, that camera is weird. It almost shouldn't have existed. Oh my, it's more, $6,500. So
right now, a camera that came out in 2020, which is old tech at this point, and it's using a discontinued mount as well, EF, is $6,500. So when you compare it to what the consumers of this product, the people buying this level of camera, they're willing to spend $6,500 on an outdated DSLR. So in that context, it's $500 cheaper for a technologically superior, smaller sized camera. So Sony is definitely probably going to, I would imagine, win with this in the market.
I think what they did was smart, because yes, it is priced kind of perfectly for all those people that are still using DSLR cameras like the 1DX Mark III. It's like, hey guys, look at this. Pretty cool. It's a little cheaper.
Yeah, I mean, this is this is 20 megapixels.
Yeah.
It can do 20 frames per second, you know, because it's limited by how fast the mirror can flip up and down. I mean, 20 frames per second mechanically flipping up and down is pretty amazing, you know, but 120 frames per second raw with a global shutter with no rolling shutter is nuts. And they've obviously designed it to not give you the 120 frames per second for every shot, because they added a button right here on the front that I'm sure you can customize to be other things, the C5 button. And that's like the fast frames per second button.
Yeah.
So you can have it set to like maybe 10 or 15 frames per second on the normal trigger. So it's just like a standard burst. But then in those moments where you're filming, you're taking pictures of somebody.
F1.
Like, F1. Yeah. And the car's driving past you and it's going 200 miles an hour. Well, as soon as that happens, then I just use my middle finger and just slap that C5 button. It just goes,
yeah,
or whatever, with no blackout. I mean, that's wild. So
it is wild. And do you remember, I think we talked about this a bit already, but do you remember those like turbo buttons on like old NES controllers that you could get and stuff? That's exactly what this reminds me of, where it would just spam the A button if you press the turbo button.
And I'm kind of getting ahead of myself, but you have had some time with the A7R5 recently.
Yes.
A lot more time with it. And you mentioned how many dials and buttons there are and how much you really enjoy that. And I'm seeing that here as well. I mean, we've got these two dials on the top. One of them is locked. I think that this is the same setup we've seen with the A7 IV and the A7 R5.
Yeah.
And yeah, I love all the locking dials, the buttons, the customization that you can have. And then the back dial is still there as well.
Yeah.
That you can set. So,
you get four dedicated dials that you can program to do essentially whatever you want. And then you also have a dedicated switch dial kind of thing for like your photo mode, video mode, and stuff like that.
Are you talking about on the left or?
Actually, there's an extra dial on that one. That's cool.
So this one has a bonus dial, I think, that a lot of Sony cameras don't have. And again, both of them are locking. And one of them is your focus setting. So autofocus single, continuous, mm-hmm. manual focus. And then you've got your high, you know, you've got your bracketing, your timer. Is that large JPEG, JPEG?
I think it's low, medium, high.
Okay, so that's your, and then high plus, which is probably 120 frames per second. So those are your, and then single. So yeah. Those are your burst rate settings. So I would imagine no matter what you're on, whether you're on single burst or low burst, at any moment that C5 button on the front just automatically engages the 120 frames burst. Mm-hmm. So that's cool. Like you could even just simply have it set to single. You don't have to have any burst and just like a normal camera just pop off single photos, and then something crazy happened. Even for somebody like me with like kids, you know, it's like I just keep it on single most of the time, but then something funny happens or my kids are running towards me in a crazy way. Just
yeah.
Is this the ultimate dad camera? Absolutely.
That's right. You should get it, Dave. Sell your C70.
Mm. Yeah, I don't know. I got my C70 back here still. I'm still rocking it. I've kind of continued to fall more in love with this camera. The more I use it, the more time goes on. It's aging like a fine wine.
Yeah.
The color is so good. The autofocus is great. Even with my Lumix cameras, I'm still finding I prefer the look of this. It's big and heavy, but I don't know. I just freaking love it.
Well, your fine wine might get a new series dropping soon.
Yeah. We'll see.
Or at least getting announced soon. And that would hurt your value.
Yeah, but that's okay. I'll just buy that one and this will be my B.
Yeah, you'll just keep that too. That's right.
Or buy a second one and then have an A and a B of the same camera because it'll be half price.
There you go.
Okay, so I think we've talked about the A9 enough. My overall thoughts are like, if I were to get if money was no object, of course, like I would choose this over like the A7S or the FX3.
Or even a Komodo X.
Yeah. If money were no object, this would be the one to get. I could sell the C70 and buy it, but I think that'd be dumb because I already got the S5s, which kind of give me the hybrid camera stuff. And then I love having a proper cinema camera with NDs and all that. Yeah. So,
You're also not shooting F1 racers.
So. No, exactly. So, yeah. But this is kind of the ultimate camera right now. And, it is a little tempting to consider buying one because it, the global shutter and the image quality looks great. I will say the dynamic range takes a hit and the low light does take a hit with global shutter, but they've been able to really push it pretty far. And, based off of the footage that I've seen online, it still holds up. And talking to my friend Jevin who made this video, he did say that, you know, you can't really push it past like, you know, like 10,000 or something, 10,000 ISO. But honestly, in real life scenarios, that's not that common. The low light machine that the A7S is like more than most people need in terms of low light performance. But that being said, just like having an F1 car or a fast performing car, having the ability to do it allows you to get creative within that. I mean, when you're able to shoot at a high ISO, you can, you know, shoot at a slower aperture, you know, a deeper depth of field aperture for creative purpose.
Yeah.
Or obviously shoot in super low light. So there is going to be a bit of a hit on the low light performance and the dynamic range performance as well, but it's got its own kind of look and vibe. I think it'll be interesting to see how people color grade it and work with it in the future. Some of the footage that I'm seeing, even on Jevon's video here, like you can sort of see how it's a little bit more contrasty because it's just not holding as much of the highlights. But I don't know. It'll just be interesting to see how this camera gets used and if it will take over the world like I think it could. But Canon and Nikon just have a stronghold in that market, and it'll be hard for those people to switch because you're talking about people who have invested $30,000-$40,000 in glass to switch over to a whole new system. I mean, for example, those like the Canon like 300 millimeter lens, or like those big giant lenses, are very expensive.
That's the biggest thing that's going to be keeping these people, because here's the thing, they're able to do their job well with what they have.
Yeah.
So that's the hard part for Sony, is going to be like, hey, I know you're able to do your job and you have all this great lenses and but this is cool and you should buy this instead. I think it's just going to be a matter of time though, because eventually those cameras won't suffice anymore, and Sony is offering currently the best you can get.
And Sony recently released their version of the 600 millimeter f4. So right. Sony's kind of starting to make glass that those types of people need. So as they continue to kind of fill out their lineup, it's just more and more, you know, of a reason to switch. Mm-hmm. Because I mean, look at that. The 600 from Canon is $1,299. By the way, $12,999.
Yeah.
Just so you know. And the Sony is the same price.
Yeah,
but this is also smaller.
These are tools for a high-end professional. Like,
we should have Jamie Price on again. I had him on twice. I don't know if you remember that guy, Jamie Price. He's a motorsport photographer, and he's a friend of mine.
Okay,
and he takes photos for F1, and he's been a Nikon shooter, and I think he switched to the Nikon mirrorless recently. But
okay, like the Z9 or whatever.
Yeah, because Nikon's. Is it the Z9 that is their flagship? They kind of came out with this, which was sort of, I guess, competing in that world, but not really, because it's a larger megapixel. But the Z9 was a big camera for them in this price bracket and in this world, but I don't think it's as good as the A9 now for these types of photographers. So,
yeah.
I'm curious to see how this progresses for video shooters, though. It'll be interesting to see what they make for the next A7S line. So global shutter, I'm in favor of a global shutter video camera. I think that'd be sick.
Yeah, I'd love to see what this camera has trickle down into their other stuff. But I think we should quickly talk about this.
Look at that cute little thing. Connor, I have had no time with it. I've watched a couple YouTube videos, but tell me about the Osmo Pocket 3, because you have it in your hands right now if you're not watching the video. Tell me about your experience with it and just your overall thoughts on the thing, and give us the lowdown on what it is.
Okay, so the Osmo Pocket 3, for those of you who can't see the video, it's this tiny little pocket gimbal. If you've seen, the Osmo Pocket 1 was very popular when it first came out. I think the Osmo Pocket 2 wasn't quite as popular, but the 3 seems like it's found a little bit of that magic again. When I first saw it, I actually wasn't going to buy it, because I was like, this is dumb. It's another gimmick. Like, the Osmo Pocket 1 was cool, but like, I don't know, it's not that interesting. But you actually convinced me that I should go out of my way and buy it, which turns out was very hard. It was difficult to find because it is very popular. I could not find it on Amazon. I could not find it on B&H Photo. I did find it at Best Buy, but there was only one left in all of Middle Tennessee, and I ended up driving over an hour to go to get it. I had to order it ahead of time because they wouldn't hold it for me. Osmo Pocket 3, it's a great little thing. It has this little, I call it the switch screen. They call it a flip screen, but I think it's a switch screen, like a Nintendo Switch. It's very satisfying. And if you flip it back vertical, it does vertical shooting mode, which is brilliant. So it does 4K, 10-bit, up to 60 frames per second. You can record in D-Log. And of course, because it's a DJI product, it has those nifty extra things that you'd expect to see, like ActiveTrack 6.0, which I think is fantastic because I film a lot of stuff by myself, and having something that can act almost as an operator is just a nice little trick to have as a solo shooter. So I love this thing. I was going to return it after I reviewed it, if I'm being honest, because I was like, it's cool, but I don't need it. I'm keeping it. It's going in my backpack. I'm taking it with me to Germany. It's the perfect B camera because I don't have to, it doesn't take up any space in my backpack. So I can pack my, well, I'll say what camera I'm bringing later, but I can pack my current camera with some lenses and then I just tuck this in anywhere. And it's just non-invasive, which I really like. Obviously, iPhone is its biggest contender, which is what my video was about. And it is a good contender. There's a lot of reasons to use an iPhone over the Osmo. But at the same time, I prefer separation from my phone and my camera as much as possible. So I like the Pocket 3.
That's high praise. Yeah, I mean, what's cool about it too is like it takes kind of the headache of gimbals out, because like gimbals are really great tools for specific type of shooting. But one of my least favorite parts about using a gimbal is just, you know, the fact that one of my cameras is going to be stuck on a gimbal. I've got to balance it. I got to make sure that, you know, it's properly balanced and it's clunky. And like, how do you store it? If you're moving from one location to another, you can just turn it off. And DJI has done a great job coming up with solutions to all these problems with the automatic kind of like locking switches, which is like insane that they figured out how to do that with RS3.
I would go grab it, but I'm locked in with headphones, but I have the RS3 Pro behind me. And that is still currently my favorite gimbal because of the locking features. It is fantastic, but you're right. They do have a quick release on it too, so that's nice too. So it's not, they've made a lot of those headaches not as much of a headache, but it does take up a lot of space.
Yeah.
And this doesn't.
To me, I feel like gimbals are kind of overused, honestly, quite a bit. And so gimbals are really great for wide establishing shots of your location. Maybe in this use case, using it as a vlogging walk and talk camera, because it'll perfectly stabilize your walking shots, and it's small and it's got that nice flip screen and it's a wide angle lens as well. Mm-hmm. So now this is a valuable tool for that type of shooting compared to like a switch pod with a big camera potentially. But honestly, I think, I don't know. I mean, what do you think about that? Like using it as a primary vlogging selfie camera, or would you rather use your real camera so that you can always switch it around and get good shots with it?
I think
shooting vlog stuff.
I think what I like about it is that it can be used that way. I don't think I would purposefully use it that way. I think my real camera is still my real camera, and that's the thing I'm going to use. Even though the iPhone 15 Pro, for example, looks really good, I'm not going to use that over my camera. I think what it comes in handy is when you're like, I need to grab something really quick. I don't want to set up my camera. Or more realistically, I need to get a shot of me. I can hand this to anyone and they can operate it because there's nothing to it.
Yeah.
Right. I could hand this to my mom and she could figure it out. You know what I mean? So,
well, and a lot of the things that you're talking about, some people might say, well, wasn't the last two Osmo Pockets also able to do those things, the Osmo 1 and the Osmo 2? It's like, yeah, they were, but it looked much more like a, you know, cell phone camera, whereas this is giving us the 1-inch sensor that DJI has been using on some of their higher-end drones, which definitely makes a big difference. It starts to really match better with a real camera.
Yeah.
Because you can get some sort of decent image and slight depth of field as well with it. But this also gives us a lot of new, like you're saying, new features with the active track. One of my favorite features that I've seen in here is that, you know, you can draw a box over your subject and it'll track it, but you can also position it compositionally where it should be in terms of like you know, compositionally, not just in the center. It's not just going to keep your subject in the center.
Right.
So you can have like a wide establishing shot of a landscape tracking onto your vehicle in the middle of this beautiful landscape, but you can have it off onto the left lower, the left third of the image, and it stays there, which makes more sense compositionally as a cinematographer. So that's a nice little feature they've added. And yeah, having the nice flip screen on it is just, it's a bigger screen and it makes sense, you know, for vertical shooting for people who are on Instagram and stuff. But again, like, is it worth spending $500 on the thing? I mean, what are your thoughts on the price point when you compare it to an iPhone?
I think if you have an iPhone 15 Pro specifically, it's a harder sell.
Yeah.
If you have any phone older than that, it's not. Like, I think it looks much better than a 14 Pro or anything before that. So I think that's a positive. And it's really down to the Apple Log. Apple Log was a huge deal, and it still is. But yeah. I think that they did a good job of making it worth the price. Because when I heard the price at first, I was like, that's too expensive. But now that I've used it, I've held it, the build quality is fantastic. Like, nothing about this feels like I'm going to break it, which is great. Which would be a concern because, you know, it does, it is a gimbal. So you wouldn't want to overstress the motors or anything like that. So I think it's worth the price. I think they did a good job. I think $500 because it can be your A camera, especially if you pair it with those DJI mics, which it can connect to it directly, which is fantastic. So you could have just this with the mic and create some pretty cool content.
Yeah, they have a kit called the Creator Kit that's $699 instead of $519, which is the by itself price point. It comes with a DJI mic that syncs directly with the Osmo. It also gives you a bonus battery pack that kind of can extend your battery life, and a little mini tripod and a carrying bag. So and the new DJI mics also record 32-bit float recording internally, so that's a new feature they've added. They haven't released the mics themselves yet. I think they will eventually, but for some reason, like, the newest version of the mic is a part of this little package, and you can't get the mic any other way, which is interesting at the moment.
That is funny.
But yeah, I think for a lot of, you know, smaller creators who are maybe travel vloggers or shooting on their phones already, like, this is a nice upgrade for those types of people. And then for people like us who are cinematographers who just need like an extra bonus angle, don't want to carry around a gimbal all the time, this can be your primary wide angle establishing gimbal shot camera. And then you just get your gimbal shots and then you just pack it away and keep moving with your real camera, you know? Mm-hmm. So, or main camera, not real. This is a very real camera as well.
It's a real camera, just like now your phone's a real camera. It's just, you know, a biggie boy camera, you know?
And also props to you on the video. I watched the video and I think I called you or left a comment and said, this feels like a real, like, classic Kinoteca style video. Like, this was just really well shot, well produced. And it turns out that it was not for nothing, because this is your first 100,000 viewed video on the channel since you've gained control. So congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, I am very happy with that. It's my first 100K video that's just solo. Like, I made it.
Yep.
So that was very exciting. It shows me, it's like, okay, I know how to do this. I know what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. I just need to keep.
You just need to listen to David's advice and do what he tells you to make.
Yeah, I just call you and say, all right, Dave, what's this week?
No, I'm joking. Sorry to take that away from you.
No, but it is true. It is true. You still have your pulse, like your finger on the pulse of all this. It's hilarious.
Yeah, I had to basically convince Connor to do this video, and I'm glad you did.
Yeah, well, I was working on a different video,
which we're about to talk about.
Yeah, which is not at 100,000 views.
Well, it's also only been like 2 hours since you posted it at the time of this recording. Yeah. But no, not to take away from this, I want to just give you a compliment. I really think that this was an excellent video. It was well shot.
Thank you.
You went at the perfect time of year at this location because it's just the beautiful fall colors in this location here. But I remember watching the video. If you haven't watched the video, we'll link it in the show notes. Definitely worth a watch. I just think like, and it's 9 minutes too, which is good. It's a longer video, which helps right now.
Yeah. But it's not long just to be long.
No.
I hate that. I actually, there's good content throughout the whole 9 minutes, I think.
You have to intentionally design a video with long content that's providing value. Even this like opening shot with the water reminds me of like Laguna, how we would always have the rocks with the water.
Yeah,
it's just a lake, so
I know. Well, I went back there and that green moss is dead.
Oh,
so
wow.
I went there cool. At just the right time.
I mean, like, look at that opening shot there. That's a beautiful shot of the lake with the fall colors, and that's an awesome location you went to there. So
yeah,
but yeah, high compliment on the video, just solid review. Like,
thank
this
you.
Is just a classic good review, and you did all of it yourself, no help. So
that's
very awesome.
That's right. I'm a big boy now. All right.
Okay. So speaking of your channel and your content, let's talk about this recent video that you posted. I traveled 1,000 miles for this photo. You posted it. This has been a long time coming, a lot of work on this video. Everybody needs to stop what they're doing right now and go watch this video.
I would appreciate that. Yeah,
it's a lot of work. I'm not gonna ruin it by playing it during this podcast. But tell us about this video. What's it about? And tell us about the process of this giant production.
So in talking to you, I've been we've been talking about the fact that the camera review scene, it's still lively and it still gets views, but it's just not as much as it used to get. And so we were talking about like, well, okay, how can I pivot my content to be still in our niche of camera equipment and photography, videography, but also have somewhat of a broader appeal as well. And I've been watching Yes Theory now for the last year. I know they've been around a lot longer, but I more recently discovered them, and I've been very inspired by them lately. So I wanted to try a video that was kind of marrying the two styles, right? So their style of more story-based content, travel-based content, and then camera equipment and stuff like that. So I ended up flying to Canada. I flew to Buffalo and then we drove up to Canada to this beautiful location called Bruce Peninsula. If you have never heard of it or seen it, I highly recommend it. I had no idea this place was in Canada. My friend recommended it, Jordan. He's in this video. He's in this video a lot. Jordan's really cool. He's a rock climber. And we just go on an adventure. And I was challenged by the sponsor of this video, Sal Digital, to basically come up with a photo at the end of this trip that I would get printed. And I get it printed rather large. If you can see it, there's part of it in my camera right now. If you get a little tease of it right there. But I only had 24 hours to do it. It's astrophotography. I had one night, and things go wrong. There's tons of up and down. I think it ended up being like, I couldn't have planned it to be better. I didn't plan a lot of things that happened. Things just happened.
Yeah.
And it ended up working out for the better, I think, of the video. So it's a totally new style. I don't think YouTube's going to know what to do with it because it's not a camera review. So hopefully they don't punish me too hard on that. I do think the only way this starts to do well is, one, if the algorithm figures it out, mm-hmm. And it actually serves it to people who are interested in this content. Because I think it's worth watching. And or if people who do find it like it enough to share it. So that's kind of my hope right now. But
yeah,
please go check it out. If you guys are listening to this or watching this, hey, how we doing? I'd be very curious to hear your input. Like, if you leave a comment on the video and just be like, hey, it came from the podcast, like, that would mean a lot to me. And let me know what you think. It's not a perfect video. This is my first time doing it. I think I could have put in more work. But at a certain point, I started this in August. If I kept working on it, I would have not posted it before the year ended. And I just really needed it to go live to see what people think and to know how I can do better when I make something in the same vein. It won't be the same video, but something in this style.
Yeah, I want to give you props for this video. I don't think you really need to do anything else to it. I mean, it's as good as it can be, really. It's fantastic storytelling. there was a ton of ups and downs, like you said. You had a plan, but things didn't go according to plan, which in turn made the story more interesting. So, and then it's also your first experiment with kind of letting things breathe as well with the story, like letting some moments happen. And I think it's just really human and really relatable for people to watch it and just see your interactions with your friend and with the other people involved in the video. It's just a really solid story and a great kind of like travel adventure.
Thank you. I appreciate
so
that.
I think this is totally like what your calling is. If I were to say something like that, you know, I think this is the style that I would love to see you experiment with more. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, in the future you could, you know, do something like this with a new piece of gear, and that would maybe help serve the kind of duality of your channel, you know?
Yeah.
So if you had like a brand new camera before it came out and then you posted a video like this on the embargo date.
Yeah.
So everybody else is doing their full reviews, but then you have this big travel adventure with the new camera. I think that would be interesting because then it would be refreshing for people who are consuming a ton of content during the embargo of a new camera. And it's like, okay, I've watched all these reviews. This guy actually used it in a real world situation. And oh, guess what? This story is really interesting and really cool.
Yeah.
You know, so, but that requires brands to kind of get behind it and to see the vision, which is really the purpose of this video, is to be able to show this to brands and companies and say like, look, I want to do more of this. Mm-hmm. I need funding to pay for the travel. And then, you know, if you could get Sony or Lumix or whoever to like give you a camera before it's announced to make a video around that, that could be interesting too.
Yeah. And honestly, like that was, you're right. That was the point of this video. The reason why it took as long as it did is because I wanted it to be something that I could send to brands and be like, look how interesting this is. Please, let's do something together. So hopefully that starts to pan out. But actually, like, I know it's kind of weird because they didn't sponsor this podcast, but kind of shout out to Sal Digital for letting me do this, because they did, you know, they didn't pay for the whole trip, but they gave me some money. Mm-hmm. They were the sponsor of the video. They do the photo print. So the print at the end and right behind me, which looks amazing. Like, they did an incredible job with the print. So shout out to them for like kind of believing in this random idea, because they just asked me for a normal video. They're like, hey, can we just be an integrated ad on a video? And I was like, hear me out. I was like, sure. What if I do something way stupid? And they were game. So
that's awesome.
I appreciate it when, I mean, brands are cool like that.
Well, it makes sense from their perspective to be game, because the entire video is centered around their product, basically. So
yeah, it's not, but it kind of is one long ad.
Yeah, it's not, it doesn't come across as a big ad, but the point for you in the video, not to give everything away, is to have this print. And so you're kind of, your goal is to get, you know, this really great print, and which is brought to you by Sal Digital. So
yeah.
But yeah, great job. I'm excited to see future videos. I will speak for everybody and say, like, just keep going. Don't let this one and done thing be it, you know. Mm-hmm. Like, I found with my content, with especially the new things, like, sometimes it just takes time. And the biggest mistake that most entrepreneurs make is giving up too early. Mm-hmm. So what you can do to, you know, beat that is just keep going and never give up, and just keep trying until it clicks, until it hits. And YouTube is a giant algorithm machine. So like, it's going to, you know, if you're going a different direction, it might take a minute for it to figure out what to do with it. So,
yeah,
but I'm excited. I think it's awesome.
And thanks.
Everybody should go check it out.
Yeah. Yeah. I appreciate that. We'll see what happens. I think if I can, the goal is to make one of these kind of a quarter.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a big endeavor in itself. So we'll see. But I would love to make them even more often than that. It's just practically, what can I try to do?
Yeah, so. For sure. Well, I think it's great. Go check it out. I traveled 1,084 miles for this photo.
Yeah. It used to be 1,000, but Dave's like, I don't know, make it not 1,000. Make it exactly what it was. I was like, okay.
Yeah, that's based on what I see when you search. I traveled my, like Ryan Trahan. I traveled 3,624 miles.
Yeah,
I traveled 1,250. I traveled 3,512. So it's just like a more interesting number. Okay, so this was the another version of the thumbnail that I made for Connie Boy. It's kind of fun because it kind of is, it mirrors the intro and outro of the video and kind of tells the story slightly, but it's also kind of leaving a sense of mystery, like what is this,
you know? Right.
So yeah, so that was kind of that was another version that we'll play with and see how it performs. But yeah, it's Connor looking at a blank wall on the left and then split down the middle, and then on the right is, you know, this beautiful starscape, and then I've got like a yellow frame in the middle where the photo will be, you know.
Yeah, so symbolizing the lack of photo.
Yeah, so we're just playing around with it. I mean, YouTube is an interesting game to play because you don't always, you don't really know what's going to work and what isn't, and there's always, you know, five or six versions of a thumbnail that could work, and so you kind of try different ideas and see which one takes off, and at a certain point you just have to pick one and go with it, you know. But yeah, we'll see how each one performs. The other one that we have currently is essentially an image of him, of Connor taking the photo, which I think mm-hmm. makes a little bit more literal sense because it's, I traveled 1,000 miles for this photo. And so the thumbnail is a picture, a really beautiful picture of him looking up at the night sky. So, but yeah, it's, I'm happy to help out with the thumbnail on this one. It was a really fun project to work on. So
sweet. Thanks, dude. But speaking of thumbnails, why don't you go ahead and expound? Cause you've become, I mean, we've already talked about this, but you've become quite the thumbnail artist and you're continuing to expand that.
So, yeah, I mean, a lot has happened in the last month. I've continued to work with Max Fosh and Curtis Connor. If you're watching the video, you can see some of the latest thumbnails I've done for them. I let a fortune teller invest my life savings for Max Fosh. A deep dive into Potterheads, which was number 3 on trending in the U.S.
Which is
and Canada.
Amazing. Which is cool.
I broke silly laws in front of the police, which got over 4 million views in a couple days, which was a 1 of 10 for Max. This one, we intentionally made it look as kind of realistic as possible. So it is trying to look like a photo, but there's a lot of manipulation that actually happened here. Mm-hmm. But it is taken from an image of him holding the reins to a cow. He was holding a glass, an empty glass. So that's a generated, I can't believe generative AI is so good. In this image, Max is holding a glass of beer in front of a policeman. Mm-hmm. So that's the idea, is that he's doing something illegal in front of the police. I just love how generative AI is so good. I basically selected the glass that he was holding, which was much smaller and didn't look anything like this. I just said beer mug, and it gave me, like, you know, it took me probably like 10 or 15 tries to get the one that I landed on here, but it's just nuts that, like, it even, you can see through it, which is because of the generative AI. So,
and it like actually distorts what's behind it as well. Like, or refraction. It's pretty impressive.
I honestly feel like I'm cheating because I'm able to do things that I would not be able to do without it. So,
yeah.
And then I took a vision healing masterclass for Curtis Connor. This one was number 1 on trending in the US and Canada. It was above Drake, which was insane. I sold Mr. Beast DNA to make cheese, over 2 million views on that one with Max Fosh. And then some of these other ones that I've already, I think, shared on the podcast before, but, I have been struggling to kind of stay focused and kind of latch on to a career path for the last couple of years, honestly.
Yeah.
And it's just because there's so many options. It's like when you start to discover that you can kind of do anything on YouTube, that sort of makes it hard to pick what you're going to do, because you can kind of do anything. You can find an audience for almost any topic. And obviously I've been invested in the camera review space and the filmmaking kind of review space for years, but I've kind of fallen out of love with that whole kind of game of reviewing every camera that comes out. That being said, I still enjoy tech. I'm still very passionate about cameras, which is why I'm here talking about cameras. It's why I've been still posting on my second channel occasionally as well. Mm-hmm. But this thumbnail kind of world was totally done by accident. I started by working with this guy, Frame Voyager, making a couple thumbnails for him. This Christopher Nolan one performed really well. And then this Atomos one was one of my favorite thumbnails to work on, which is like this really interesting detective board. And I started getting more and more work with Hayden, you know, Hayden Hillier-Smith on the editing podcast and on his personal channel. And it just started kind of snowballing, and I've continued to get more and more clients and more work. And I genuinely enjoy the process of making these. I'll spend sometimes 2 to 4 hours on a thumbnail, and I really enjoy it. So Colin and Samir have a really big podcast where they interview YouTubers and creators. And on a recent episode, he actually, they interviewed Curtis Connor, who I've been working with, and he kind of gave me a little shout out. And so I made a little edit.
Which is like the cool part about the thumbnail dude I've been working with too. It's like, he has ideas that we like bounce off each other. And like, it's like, that's like a whole new thing for me. Which is like having someone else.
Dude, the thumbnail guy, like cottage industry of our space is pretty incredible.
It's crazy.
You know, like that's an entire economy now of thumbnail guys. I don't even understand what they're doing. Yeah. And they just like chicken scratch it and then just flip it around. And you're like, how did you do that?
It's nothing amazing because from my understanding, it's not AI. And maybe that's why it's amazing. It's like,
Yeah. Right. Yeah. It's pretty impressive what they can do these days.
Yeah. Dude. Yeah. This is so cool. It's really, I wish you would have shouted you out in a name, but you are the only thumbnail guy, but it is funny to see you on Colin and Samir. That's really cool.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm just kind of excited about this new, totally new path that I've been on recently. So
yeah, no, I mean, that's super exciting. And your thumbnails are genuinely good. So, I mean, the Potterhead one is great.
I mean, it looks like a scrapbook is what I told Curtis. I was like, your style is basically scrapbooking.
yeah.
But there's a lot going on here. I mean, I took a lot of images and had to merge them together and get it to sort of look halfway decent. But
yeah. And you're also paying attention to color, I noticed, because like left is red, obviously red is blue, but then also there's like a green part kind of behind the red, and it's kind of all green, and this other corner is kind of almost like a light white kind of a thing. So it's like the colors also play really nicely together. Like you are doing a lot. It's not like it's, you know,
well, this one took 5 hours to make this one. Yeah.
Yeah. You don't just turn these out in no time.
Yeah. Well, anyways, that's kind of the update there with that. So, I did apply for Mr. Beast thumbnails. They're looking for more thumbnail artists. So I did apply for that. So we'll see.
Okay.
I'd be down to work for the man.
Yeah.
If he would have me, but
little Jimmy, come
I haven't
on.
Gotten any emails yet, but
yeah.
Yeah. If you want to follow me in my thumbnail journey, I would highly recommend following me on X, Twitter, whatever it's called. That's where I'm posting mostly. And that's really where the community of thumbnail artists live anyways, too. So
there's probably other stuff we could talk about, but I say that was pretty good. That's a good episode.
Oh, heck yeah. Thanks for being here, guys. Another episode of Golden Hour Podcast in the books.
Woohoo!
And we're happy to be on the YouTubes for the first time in a while. So thanks for watching. If you've been here, please consider subscribing on your audio podcast platforms, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Overcast, wherever you listen, if you haven't already. And that's where we're going to be continuing to post the audio show. Everybody go watch Connor's latest video. I traveled 1,000 miles for this photo. Go check it out. Leave a comment. Say you came from the show. That would mean the world to Connor, I'm sure, to see you over there and to give him some support on that one. And hope you guys have a wonderful holiday. Thanksgiving, Black Friday. Go buy some fun hard drives. It's always a good time to stock up on hard drives.
Everyone's favorite holiday, Black Friday.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And hopefully you guys won't have any crazy family drama, but there always is some sort of thing that happens.
Hopefully, if you have family drama, it's at least funny.
Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, thanks for joining us. Once again, I'm David Altizer.
And I'm Connor McCaskill.
And we'll see you on the next one.
See you guys.